Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to the Indus Infrastructure Trust Q3 FY25 earnings conference call. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star, then zero on your touch-tone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Amit Kumar Singh, the Chief Executive Officer of the Investment Manager. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Thanks, Sejal. Hi, and very good afternoon, everyone. At the outset, on behalf of Indus Infrastructure Trust and GR Highways Investment Manager Private Limited, I welcome you all to the third quarter of FY25 earnings conference call of the Indus Infrastructure Trust. I would like to take this moment to inform all of you that, as per regulator's advisory, we have changed the name of our InvIT from Bharat Highways InvIT to Indus Infrastructure Trust. The name Indus Infrastructure Trust embodies our continuous commitment to comprehensive infrastructure development across India and leveraging the opportunities in the Indian infrastructure sector. You all must be wondering why the name is Indus Infra. The term Indus resonates pretty well with our rich heritage of connectivity and economic progress, and also mirrors our mission to drive infrastructure advancement with sustainability and innovation at its core. I'll now take you through operational highlights of the trust for the quarter, followed by financial highlights, and at the end, we'll move on to the Q&A session. As of December 31st, 2024, the trust had eight HAM road assets with an average balance of approximately 11.4 years. For the same period, the outstanding annuities of the project SPVs stood at 6,729 crores, and 53 of the total 240 annuities have been received on time. An update on the acquisitions front: we continue to evaluate the ROFO as well as third-party assets. We have received one proposal from GR Infra to acquire one of their HAM assets, and we have already initiated our necessary diligence on that. We'll keep you all informed with respect to those acquisition developments. If we get into our financial performance, we have successfully optimized our operational efficiency and have maintained a robust financial position with our current leverage at around 27%. This reflects our commitment of creating a long-term value for our investors. The board of directors of the investment manager in yesterday's board meeting approved a DPU of rupees 2.75 for Q3 FY25, further broken into interest and dividend, interest of rupees 2.51 per unit, and dividend of 24 paise per unit. Including the current announced DPU of rupees 2.75 per unit, our cumulative DPU at the end of the third quarter stands at rupees 11.95 per unit. I'm very pleased to inform you that we have already surpassed the guidance given at the time of listing of our InvIT in the 9 months itself. Also, a quick update on the road sector cumulative award for the year 2025 to date, that is up to December 31st, 2024, is 3,100 kilometers, and cumulative construction for the same period is 5,853 kilometers. The Ministry of Road Transport and Highways has incurred almost 225,000 crores till December 2024. The budgetary support for the roads and highway sector has grown almost 8 times in the last decade, and allocation grew at a CAGR of almost 22% following the announcement of Bharatmala Pariyojana. With the same enthusiasm, we also expect the center to increase the allocation for the sector in the coming budget to reaffirming its commitment to NIP, which is National Infrastructure Pipeline. It's my firm belief that InvITs are expected to play a greater role to garner private capital for the development of national highways in the short as well as medium and long term. If you say, as per the industry reports, the assets under management of road sector of InvITs is expected to rise from 1.9 trillion, which is almost 190,000 crores in September 24, to 3.2 trillion, which is 320,000 crores by March 26. So there's a huge opportunity available for the InvITs to acquire road assets, which are set to become operational in the next 2 to 3 years, and we, as Indus Infrastructure Trust, strive to add a decent chunk of high-quality road infrastructure projects to our portfolio. As we move forward, Indus Infrastructure Trust remains steadfast in its mission to contribute to nation's infrastructure growth while delivering a growing and steady returns to our unit holders. Our strategic rebranding, our healthy balance sheet, our ROFO and non-ROFO asset pipeline, and the immense opportunity we see around positions us for a sustained success in the years to come. Now, without taking much of your time, I'll now pass it on to Harshil, who will take you through the financial details before we open up for questions. Thank you. Over to you, Harshil.
Thanks, Amit. Coming to Q3 FY25 performance on a standalone basis, the interest income on the loan extended by the trust to the SPVs was rupees 179 crores approximately, as against rupees 147.8 crores in quarter two FY25. The increase in the interest income was on account of acquisition of Aligarh-Kanpur project, which contributed around 34.8 crores during the quarter, as against a contribution of rupees 3 crores during the second quarter. Dividend received during the quarter from SPVs was 26.75 crores, which was utilized for distribution during the last quarter. Further, on the EBITDA front, EBITDA for the quarter was around 204.81 crores, adjusted for the diminution in value of investment. The diminution was on account of difference between the fair value and book value of investment, and primarily was on account of the amount of cash which was upstreamed by the SPVs. The total external borrowing at the trust level stands at 1,789 crores, and the interest cost on the same was around 37 crores during the quarter. The increase in interest cost by approximately 12.8 crores was on account of additional borrowing availed for refinancing of external debt of Aligarh-Kanpur during the month of September 2025. With respect to the tax outflows on the other income, which is earned by the trust at the rate of 42.74%. On a consolidated basis, the total income for the quarter was 224.5 crores, consisting of 210 crores of revenue from operations and other income of around 14-odd crores. The increase in the total income was primarily on account of increase in finance income on account of acquisition of Aligarh-Kanpur project. The EBITDA for the period was around 163 crores. In relation to NDCF at the trust level, the project SPVs have declared a dividend amounting to 17.1 crores for Q3 FY25, and interest income received for the quarter was around 179-odd crores, resulting in total cash upstream to the InvIT of around 196 crores. Post adjusting for finance cost, debt, and trust-level expenses, which is given on slide 8 of the presentation, the NDCF works out to 122.69 crores. The board has declared, as Amit mentioned earlier, the board has made a declaration of distribution of 2.75 per unit, breakup of which comprised of 2.51 in the form of interest and 0.24 in the form of dividend. As per the recent amendment in SEBI InvIT regulation, the distribution has to be made within five working days from the record date. The record date for this particular distribution will be February 3rd, 2025. That is Monday. Thank you, and we are open to questions now.
Thank you very much. We will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one on their touch-tone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are requested to use handsets while asking a question. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. The first question is from the line of Arya Mehta from Maximal Capital. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon, sir. So, sir, of this 9.2 rupees which has been distributed, I think some portion would be attributed to March 2024 month also, right? So for this year, how much should we factor in as distributed for this year for the nine months?
See, actually, for the March, because we got listed on the 12th of March, right? So if you see in our calculation, what we see that basically since we have started enjoying or using the capital 12th March on 12th March 2024 onwards. So we see from that that 12th March 2024 onwards till 31st December 2024, which is nine months and maybe a tad above nine months, basically we have distributed already or we have announced to distribute already 11.95, which is, of course, was higher than the guidance what we had given at time of InvIT. For the quarter, which is one quarter pending, of course, we need to see how, you know, how much basically SPV streams, how much we are going to, you know, receive in the form of interest, and then we'll decide, because there are maybe other expenses also with respect to acquisitions and all. So that we'll see, and then maybe we'll decide and formalize it at, you know, post the end of the quarter.
Yeah, so if we analyze the thing including, let's say, 2/3 of March, then it is coming to around 11.4 rupees. So that's a fair assumption, right, for the year?
Yeah, so the I think guidance was 11, even if you see that way, the guidance was 11.5, and maybe for the 9 months itself, the 11.4 is done already, right?
No, 11.4 is the annualized number if we take into account 20-odd days for March.
Achha, you're saying that you maybe 20 days of the March you set aside, and then you 11.95 for the 9 months. I think annualized number will be more, not 11.4. Because March was only 20 days odd, right? And then we have 9 months, and we already got 11.95. So it's like 9 months, 20 days, if you're getting 11.95 and annualized, even if you take the 20 days aside, I think there definitely is going to be more than 11.4.
Okay. So that is one. And secondly, any guidance on what we can do next year in terms of distribution?
See, guidance, you know, the guidance what we had given for at the time of IPO, which was, I think, 11.5, right? We stick to that guidance. I'm not changing that guidance as of now.
Okay. And what is, you know, how much more AUM can we expect to add in the next, right, in this financial year and next financial year as things stand now?
See, we are, you know, as I mentioned in my call, right, there's a one basically proposal which we have already received from GR for one of the HAM asset. I think there we have already started our diligence, and only thing is, the as per limit you can take asset, you know, only once its revenue generation crosses 1 year, revenue generation history. The second unity of that asset is expected around you know, first half of April. So definitely we are going to acquire that asset during the month of April, and which we had thought that we may acquire in the March itself. We have already applied, I think the NHAI NOC and Linda NOC has already been applied by GR. So that should be on time, but I think with this, you know, 6-7 days here and there, I think that March may become the first half of April. For the next year, we have almost definitely 3 to 4 assets of GR which is lined up for the acquisition. And for the non-GR assets, of course, you know, we'll keep, you know, you guys updated if you, you know, move forward in that range. But I think we can say safely for the next year, 4 to 5 assets acquisition of GR, non-GR will let you know. Once, you know, we significantly move ahead in that, in those directions.
And each of these assets, we should assume 700-800 crores of AUM addition?
AUM addition is, yeah, you can say ballpark, on a ballpark basis, average, yeah, maybe 600 to 800 odd crores in terms of AUM.
Yes.
Because all these assets are north of 1000 crores, but you know, it's like 40% NHAI and it's only 60% what you have to do, right? So I think, yeah, you can say safely on the safer side, 600 to 700 crores. Yeah.
Okay. And in terms of our debt to AUM, where do we stand now? And have we been able to reduce the debt cost in these 3 months?
See, debt to AUM, I had mentioned it's right now, currently as we speak, it stands at around 27%. Debt cost we could not reduce because the borrowing what we did was at InvIT level was linked to repo, and you see, right, in the last 1 year repo has not changed, RBI has kept it same, so that's why the spread was fixed and there's nothing changed in, you know, so that we can go to lenders and ask for that. So as of now it remains at 8.1%, which we had borrowed. So two times we borrowed, one at the time of InvIT when we acquired asset, and second time when we bought this eighth asset of ours, which was GR Aligarh Kanpur. But our cost is 8.1% only, which is not changed because linked to repo and RBI has not changed that.
Okay. These are in the form of NCDs or what's the nature of that?
It's in the form of loan only.
Okay.
Yeah.
Understood, sir. Thank you and all the best.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Anand Mundra from My Temple Capital. Please go ahead.
Hello. Good afternoon, sir. Thank you for the opportunity.
Hi, Anand.
Sir, approximately 137 crore has been retained at the SPV level. What is that for?
Yeah. So, Anand, there are current liabilities sitting in the books of the SPV. So that's why there is a retention at the SPV level to meet those obligations.
Okay. That's against current liabilities. All right.
Yeah.
And so this, by the end of this year, I think in the earlier call, you had mentioned that you were looking to acquire around two assets. So one, you said you already received one interest from GR Infra. This other asset was also a GR asset or a non-GR asset?
That was non-GR asset, and basically, we'll be disclosing about that at the opportune time.
Okay. So, sir, when it comes to non-GR assets, how would you take care of, say, the maintenance risk and the other contingent liabilities that are there on the assets? And what kind of IRR would you look for when it's a non-GR asset?
See, I think there's a very defined framework. IRR, if you remember, we have been mentioning on our call that whatever yield we'll create, the asset what we acquire at IRR should be at IRR, which actually provides an uptake of my yield. So my yield should become yield acquisition, rather should become yield accretive with every incremental asset acquisition. So suppose we are trading at currently, say, 10.5, 11, I'll try to make an acquired IRR, of course, which is north of 11, which could be 11.5, which could be 12, so that my currently, yield becomes, or maybe my price becomes yield accretive. That acquisition rather becomes yield accretive. So non-GR assets, of course, will be looking to acquire basically higher to what we are acquiring. In terms of O&M, actually, if you see what we are doing is that whenever we do, after giving NBO, suppose we'll go ahead, there's a proper diligence. So in terms of we'll appoint a third-party technical consultant. So first, when we go, of course, we have an in-house team as well, which we take and basis that we give our non-binding, and so non-binding will get signed. Post that, we appoint a basically technical, and that will be of repute. So reputed technical consultant who will give their technical number. And suppose O&M number, major maintenance number, those numbers, and then of course, because we ultimately GR has to do the O&M and major maintenance to Aadhar Shila. So they will also do their internal numbers, right? Those numbers have to match, or maybe if there's any issue, those have to be reconciled. Finally, the O&M numbers was given by the consultant, or whatever GR decides is the final number. That number gets inputted in our model, and then finally, whatever value arrives, that value, subject to, of course, the target IRR we have, we basically go and final the two, we'll do the deal at that value. So this is the framework what we have. And of course, other than technical, you'll do all the other, which is tax, whether it's a DD, whether it's FDD, everything will be done, insurance, so legal. So everything will be done from, and generally we don't cut corners, all the big fours and all there, or maybe the reputed ones are there who are doing our DDs. In terms of O&M, yes, that's the framework, and we are following that framework.
Oh, so even if it's a non-GR asset, the maintenance will be managed by Aadhar Shila only. That understanding is correct, right, sir?
Absolutely. Aadhar Shila, and of course, through Aadhar Shila, and GR will do it.
Okay. Okay. Got it. And so next year, we've guided for maybe, say, four asset acquisitions. So where do you see the debt level reach? So debt by AUM, will we reach the 49% next year? I'm just trying to understand when is it that we would require a next round of fundraise? when will we exhaust our limit?
See, I'll tell you, directly coming to your second part, because right now I'm 27 and again I'll take say 2-3 more assets, I'll be at 44-45. But in terms of my fundraise, it will be towards the latter part of the next half, which will be say September to December quarter. We will, you know, we may come further because we have 4 assets and those 4 assets, I think, in terms of AUM will be somewhere around 3,000 crores. So if I do 3,000 crores and if I do a debt equity, say even of 60%, I'll have to have 1,800 crores of the debt. So with 1,800, I'll be 3,600. So of course my AUM will also increase, but I think I may have to come, and depending on the non-other GR assets also, I may have to come to the market next year, depending on, you know, how I am able to conclude those acquisitions. I think maybe either third or fourth quarter of next year. That's what the timeline, I think, ballpark, basically tentatively what I look at.
Got it, sir. And sir, one of your, I mean, there's a recently listed competitor. So I was just looking at their cost of debt. Their cost of debt is around 7.8%, whereas we are at 8.1%. So why is there, you know, it's a big gap. So is, I mean, are the terms different for us versus them? I mean, how is there such a big difference here?
See, Anand, to be honest, I wouldn't want to comment on the competition's cost of debt or competition's framework, because it's not only cost of debt, a lot of things will be different. So I actually would want to focus on, you know, my performance and bettering my operational highlights. But one thing I can tell you is that the 13-year, 14-year loan what I'm taking and the tenor what I'm taking, 8.1%, which is spread of 160 over the repo, I doubt that, you know, very few people in the market would have been getting that kind of rates. Of course, when I can go and do the bond, I can get it to a cheaper rate, which is 1 year, 2 year, 3 years. So you can't compare actually a 1 year, 2 year bond with a 13-year loan or 14-year loan.
Okay.
And I actually link to repo, right? Once my repo will get, here starts, so my rate will also start coming in. So with 25 bits cut, I'll directly come down to 785.
Okay. Got it.
But in the bond, in the 3 year structure, you get stuck with that pricing, right?
Yes.
So the lot of valuation was done before InvIT itself. And I think the pricing what we got with our thought process, our estimation of the rate cut, our estimation of the repo movement, our estimation of how US is behaving, how US is sneezing and India catching the cold because of that. I think with all that, you know, we thought of going ahead with this. And I still think that my pricing is one of the best pricing we enjoy in the industry.
Got it. And so there are other deals also that are happening. So like Ashoka has recently sold its HAM portfolio, I think, to one of KKR or Macquarie or someone.
Secura.
I'm not sure who.
Secura.
Okay. So, I mean, typically what are the, I mean, there are a lot of deals that are happening in the market. So typically what equity IRR are these deals happening at?
Difficult to attribute any value, Anand. We may have to check with those guys. Because, you know, it's all the confidential data which doesn't get shared in the market.
Okay. So, I mean, were we not involved in these kind of discussions or, I mean, did we try to bid for these assets or?
No, I was. So, which one you said, of course, we had bidded for that. But, of course, there was some valuation mismatch. So, that's why we couldn't go. But we were like the one who had looked at this asset, entire 11, 12 assets, almost one and a half years back.
Okay, so I'm just trying to understand because, I mean, given the InvIT structure that we have and given our cost of capital, it will be difficult for anyone to, you know, beat that. So just want to understand where, I mean, are we very off from the market? I mean, I can't imagine why someone would not, why would an InvIT not get the deal versus someone else bidding more competitively, given that our, you know, our structure is far better and more efficient.
And there are a lot of reasons for that. If I'll start outlining the reasons, it will take longer. But one thing I can tell you is that if your InvIT will take any asset, of course, one thing, we would want to be very sure of the quality, right? Because we are already have 8 assets from a guy who's literally, you know, is a good quality player. So we actually, what we do is we benchmark that quality with every incremental asset which we plan to take. Now what happens is that the moment you would want to compromise the quality of one asset, whatever the return you would have made on the 8 or 9 or 10 other assets will get equalized. So it's so now that's why we are not really fancy of say acquiring a portfolio, because when you acquire a portfolio, you might get good asset, may not get so good asset also. So we actually maybe do more diligence, I would say. We take more time. We remain a little conservative. And we think that maybe in the long term, that conservatism will play off, will pay off more and will play out better.
Got it, got it, sir. That explains it quite well. That's it from mine. Thank you, sir. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Vivek Agrawal from DV Investments. Please go ahead.
Sir, good afternoon. Question was regarding this retention of 137 odd crores. You told it is against current liabilities. These SPVs will have this amount of current liability, or it is earmarked for some other purpose? Why? Because SEBI has also told that you have to distribute 90% of your cash flows, and we are retaining a significant amount. It's like $3 per unit.
So Vivek, you know, there are certain prior period claims also, you know, which are received during this period and which has not been paid out yet. So that's why the number is looking a bit on the higher end. Further, for the 9 months period, you know, whatever is the O&M expenditure, the billing happens on a 6 monthly basis. So for the 9 months, the entire provision is sitting in the books. So that is the reason the number is appearing a bit higher.
Maybe you can see in the next quarter, Vivek, when the next quarter this will get balanced out. So this is just a standing mismatch. Yeah.
Fair enough, sir. Fair enough. And because we have done a retention of 60 crores of 59.2 crores in Q2 last year, Q2 last quarter. That should have been first, and it would have got distributed this quarter, or that come cash in you?
So that was towards, you know, because there was a debt service requirement in Aligarh Kanpur where we had not received the no due certificate from the lender. So that's why that amount was blocked. You know, unfortunately, it was encumbered. And that has been subsequently released, and that particular SPV, as I mentioned, you know, has contributed towards the interest income during this quarter. So, you know, because the annuity is not received in that particular SPV during this period, post-acquisition.
Oh, okay. So that cash has been used in that way.
Yeah.
Okay. And again, Dasra we have retained this quarter. We have not taken any fresh borrowing. And last quarter we have retained some Dasra. So again, there is some Dasra requirement, or this is like some...
So this is not retained, you know. So there is a repayment profile based on which, you know, for the ensuing 3 months we keep on creating Dasra. So there was a requirement. Yeah. So that is the reason why there was an additional outflow required in this particular quarter.
So Vivek, as of now, it's only 8 assets. The moment you'll acquire more assets, right? Dasra requirements will may go up, down. So basically, depending on
that. I was just thinking that in the quarter, if you don't raise any debt, then there shouldn't be any other Dasra unless the repayment profile changes.
Yeah.
So taking the repayment profile would have changed, and therefore you are retaining.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And going forward, on the taxability part, is there any view that you guys are taking? So,
sorry, Vic, you are not coherent. Can you just come again?
Mr. Vivek,
how to make the distributions?
Mr. Vivek, I would request you to please use your handset.
I am using the handset only. Am I better now?
So your voice is breaking. We can't hear you clearly.
No, sorry. Leave it then. Leave it. Sorry.
No, you can try again. We are happy to maybe just give a try one more. Please ask.
No, so taxability, are you guys thinking in some way how to make the distributions more tax efficient as you go forward?
Yeah, definitely, Vivek. So I think I know where you're coming from. So, right, you know, initially what happens because your SPVs and all would have the positive balance, right? So, first you basically distribute the surplus, which actually gets distributed in the form of dividend. And, of course, the interest what you're charging, which goes as. But I think going forward, I think this will change, definitely. And then you start seeing more as a, you know, capital repayment, I think, which will take care of your taxability portion.
Okay, thank you so much.
Thanks. You're welcome.
Thank you. The next follow-up question is from the line of Arya Mehta from Maximal Capital. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon, sir. So just a couple of follow-ups. One is, what is the NAV right now?
I think the NAV, basis the September valuation which was done, was in the range of around 114 rupees. 113 or something, was 113, 114 rupees. Yeah.
Okay. And on the further acquisitions part, in terms of pricing and the yield accretion, just wanted some more clarity. So see, right now on the 11.5 rupees sort of a distribution, you are trading at, let's say, 10% yield for the unit holders, right? And your cost of debt is 8%. So now when you acquire an asset, you know, how are you looking at it? There are project IRRs. Are you looking at 10% project IRR, which will give us maybe 12% sort of an equity IRR because we will be acquiring using 8% debt? Or are you looking at, you know, equity IRRs itself to be 10% or maybe 10.5% in that range?
So we don't look at project IRR first. We look at equity IRR only. And equity IRR, what we are looking right now, so like, right, if you see, like, take the example of, you know, the last asset acquisition one, it was from GR only. So we did an acquisition, and we had told on the, we have mentioned on the call as well, that that acquisition actually helped us to take the yield from 11.5 to almost 11.9 to around, you know, range of 11.9 to 12-ish. Almost 45, 50 bits was the yield, you know, yield up. Basically, yield went up because of those acquisitions. So it's not that I'm right now, say, for example, I'm trading at, say, 10.5 yield. I will do a 10.5 only. Of course, I'll strive for the best, right? Whether it will be 11.5, it could be 12, it could be 13, it could be 14, whatever that number. But the point what happens, you know, is that once my repo moves down, right, comes down, of course, I'll have some impact of that as well. So keeping that thing in the mind, that's why we say that, you know, our acquisition at any point of time is going to be yield accretive. The reason being that whether even I get 11.5, 11.2, because we also do a lot of sensitivity data that I'm acquiring, right? Then how the interest rate movement will happen. So basically then overall this asset will give me how much.
Moment, sir, we understand. But right now you are trading at 10%, 11.5 rupees divided by 11, 113, 114. So that is 10%. So you are looking at 10 to 10.5% sort of equity IRR, or are you looking at...
No. I think more than that. Not that.
Okay. And in terms of the debt itself, you know, like, any particular reason why we have taken repo linked debt instead of maybe trying to get fixed rate long tenure debt? Because on the distribution side, we have HAM assets, which are basically fixed. So then on the, there can be a mismatch between the two should the interest rates go up.
No, it's a very interesting question. I think we had at the time of, you know, when we're doing the IPO, we had explained it. So, you know, in a HAM asset, maybe I'll just take a minute to explain to you again. HAM asset, what happens is that 100 rupees is the cost. Authority gives you 40 rupees during construction and 60 rupees authority gives you during the operation period, which is 15 years, right? And then authority also pays the interest on that 60 rupees. So the 8 assets what we have now, they are basically authority is paying me interest on annuities which is linked to base rate. Base rate is nothing but repo plus 25 bps. So what I'm getting, actually the interest from authority on those outstanding annuities is at the rate of repo plus 325 bps. Well, what we could negotiate from lenders is, so, you know, okay, so why did we take link to repo? Because what I'm getting from authority is linked to repo or linked to base rate, which is again in from repo plus 325 bps. So we thought that let's take loan which is underlying linked to repo itself, so that my inflow and outflow becomes the gets linked to same benchmark, which is repo.
Does it nullify the impact fully?
No, it's not entire, because it will nullify to the extent of my leverage. But the point is that suppose my leverage goes to 60-65%. So my 2/3 of that will get nullified. Second thing is, if I take a fixed, in a means I don't know, we can deliberate on that, but maybe whether this is a proper time to say take something a 3-year, 5-year, 7-year fixed, when you know you can see that maybe in the next, means I'm not that I can't forecast, but maybe you can see that our interest rate cut down over this next 3 to 6 months. So should we basically, you know, lock us ourselves by taking a, say, a, you know, longer term loan, or maybe we should keep it flexible. And then when suppose interest rates move down and we are at a reasonably, say, subdued, you know, interest cycle, that time we should take something, you know, which is fixed for, say, 5 years, 7 years, and, you know, get our outflows locked. So that is the, you know, viewpoint we have taken. Okay. And that time we had a discussion with rating agencies, investors, and they liked it. That, okay, I think your inflow outflow get linked to the same. So I think then what happens, it takes care of your, you know, variability.
Understood, sir. Thank you. And all the best.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, you may press star and 1 to ask a question. The next question is from the line of Ankit from Kotak Bank. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. I just have 2 questions. One is on the incremental acquisition which you want to do from third-party assets and from GR. Will the indemnity clause will remain which was there for initial assets? Because we have seen in Varanasi Sangam, there was deduction in payments. So how are we taking care of it?
Yeah. So then most of the clauses which were there earlier will remain as same.
So third-party assets only?
Yeah.
Okay. And on, since we are planning to acquire 4 more assets, so just want to check, so now we will be, so after 6 distribution, we can increase our leverage to more than 49%. So with this 4 to 5 acquisitions, where will be our leverage? And at what point in, leverage level will be looking to raise another equity?
See, so it depends. SEBI has floated a consultation paper where they are saying that, you know, basically you may increase your leverage from 49 to 70 if you would have completed your 6 quarterly distributions.
Correct.
In our case, I think we have already completed our 4 quarterly distributions. So with March and June, we'll be completing 6. So if that consultation paper say, I don't know, I'm just saying that, if it gets formalized, then maybe after June itself, we should be able to raise our leverage from 49 to 70. So in that case, I can still acquire almost 6,000-7,000 crores of the value of the, you know, asset without raising any equity. So I think I had given the answer of this as well, that depends what time I'm acquiring what value of the asset. But if everything goes as well as planned, we may look to raise equity sometime, maybe September, December, or maybe March quarter next year. Not September, December or March quarter next year.
Okay. No, so my question was specifically, is there an internal threshold that will maximize up to 60% and after that we'll go for equity raise, or we can raise below that level? That was the question.
See, the criteria is 49% and 70%, but since we are the listed player, you don't want to have some threshold that tomorrow if anything happens, say for example, in your price moves down, right? Or maybe basically because of that some AUM comes down because of anything happens, you should have some threshold. You may want, if you say a 5 to 10% of the, you know, some safe thing on your thing. So maybe you once you pass 60, 65, you should not take more. In 49, the moment you touch 45, 46, you should not take more leverage. That's kind of the threshold we have now.
Okay. Thank you. That's from my side. Thank you.
Sure.
A reminder to all the participants that you may press star and 1 to ask a question. Ladies and gentlemen, you may press star and 1 to ask a question. The next follow-up question is from the line of Anand from My Temple Capital. Please go ahead.
Hello. Thank you for the follow-up. Sir, you just explained that how through the acquisition of one asset, our payout has actually increased from 11.5 to 11.85, 11.9. So,
yeah.
Just wanted to understand, assuming everything else remains the same and we acquire new assets at the same IRR of equity IRR of about 12% that we've done for the first asset, and we leverage up to 60-65%, What do you think this yield that is currently at 11.8, 11.9, that can go up to?
Nee, so Anand, every asset acquisition cannot be at the 12%, to be honest. Because I always maintain that it will be incremental to the yield I'm trading. So first I could negotiate 12, doesn't mean that everything I'll be negotiated 12. It could be lesser. So depending what the best I can negotiate, because when we negotiate with GR, it's like a third or complete on the arm's length basis. So what finally I could negotiate and, you know, get the final with GR and could get the final rate, that will only decide basically, you know, what kind of yield I'll be. So it's not that every asset acquisition will, you know, will keep increasing 40, 50 bucks. Otherwise, then with a 4 asset, 5 asset, you will cross 14, 15%. That is very highly unlikely case. But yeah, as I said, I've been maintaining that whatever yield we are trading will ensure that my incremental asset acquisition becomes a yield accretive. But that 12% should not be taken as a benchmark.
Okay. But sir, equity IRR of 12% is not a very big ask from the 30%, because the project IRR then becomes, I mean, shouldn't 12% be our internal benchmark as well, at least?
Anand, again, I would say that it's a function of the asset you are buying. So I agree with you that internal benchmark should be 12%. Answer is yes, it should be. But then will you get every asset at 12%? My answer is I don't know. So that's why I can't say that, 12% should be, because today I may negotiate 12, tomorrow maybe it could be 11.5, could be 11.25, could be 11.75. That's why I'm not saying that it should be 12. But yes, if interest rate moves down, even I'll do it 11.5, that will also become a good yield accretive. So that's why I said to you that every incremental asset acquisition will be yield accretive, that will ensure for sure.
Okay, got it. All right, thank you, sir.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, you may press star and 1 to ask a question. As there are no further questions from the participants, I would now like to hand the conference over to Mr. Amit Kumar Singh for closing comments.
So, thanks Sejal, and again thanks all of you, all the unit holders for joining this call, all the investors for joining this call, and reaffirm our commitment to keep growing this platform and keep delivering the desired returns to all of unit holders. Thank you so much. Thanks.
Thank you. On behalf of Indus Infra Trust, that concludes this conference. Thank you for joining us, and you may now disconnect your lines.